Hello and thank you for downloading this Witness History podcast from the BBC World Service with me, Rebecca Kesby. History as told by the people who were there. And as part of our series on animals in history, we now travel back to the 1960s and the man who invented the shark cage in order to study one of mankind's most feared predators. His inspiration came from his own near-fatal encounter with a great white shark.
Well, it was certainly a day that changed my whole life, but the main scars are really in my mind.
On December the 8th, 1963, 23-year-old Australian diver Rodney Fox took part in a regional spear fishing competition not far from Adelaide on the south coast, and he really wanted to win.
I found out that I really needed a large dusky morwong would help me with the point score help to win it. It's a large weed-eating fish of all things. They're fairly common, but because so many people had been diving all day, most of the bigger ones had been frightened off. Anyway, I decided that I would go out into the deep water where I knew most of the other divers wouldn't have dived. And as I was just swimming along the bottom, I saw the fish I needed. And I was just about to squeeze the trigger when this huge thump and crash hit me into my chest, knocked the gun out of my hand, and hurled me through the water at great speed. First of all, I thought I'd been hit by a submarine because it was so big, and then I realised it must have been a giant shark.
Ironically, Rodney Fox sold life insurance for a living at the time, but he was now in a desperate struggle for survival with one of the world's most powerful predators.
I quickly thought its eyes, I should gouge its eyes to make it let go. For some reason, it sort of let me go. I fell out of its mouth and instinctively thrust my hand towards it to push it away. But my right hand disappeared through the teeth into its mouth, ripping like crazy. Before it could close its jaws, I quickly ripped my hand out again, and then I grabbed it in a bear hug because I knew it couldn't bite me that way.
Clutching onto the great white shark's body, bleeding profusely, Rodney faced his next potentially deadly problem. He was running out of air.
I'm still holding my breath underwater, and I knew I had to let go, otherwise I'd drown. So I pushed off to the surface, took two or three breaths, and I looked down, and there coming up towards me through bright pink blood was this great big head and these big white teeth. And I thought, I'm gone. I have nothing to protect myself. What can I do? What can I do? I kicked as hard as I could, and my fin only just touched it, and I meant to give it a real thump. But the shark turned and swallowed the two fish that I had speared on the way out that were floating on a little buoy.
The moment of relief was short. Rodney's belt was attached by a line to the spear, the fish on the end of it, and consequently, the shark.
It swam down, dragging me underwater again. Down, down, down. I'm spinning, spinning, spinning. And I was within split seconds of just gasping water and dying. When the line snapped,
it was the first of many lucky moments that contributed to Rodney's miraculous survival. The crew of a nearby boat had seen the blood in the water, scooped him out as he surfaced and raced him ashore. He was then bundled into the back of a car and rushed to hospital. But his injuries were horrific.
I could hardly breathe. My lung had collapsed. It would make this shuddering gurgle in through my stomach. Every rib in my body was cracked. There was a huge gash in my side which exposed the spleen and main artery from the heart to the stomach was just left pumping there. I was in a pretty bad way, but my wetsuit was holding it all together. Over 450 stitches in my chest, 26 in the lung, and the doctor actually said to me in a very dry way, he said, we stitched up your lung and there was a little bit left over, so we cut it off and gave it to the hospital cat. That's the way he described it.
I've seen some of the photographs of your injuries after this attack, Rodney, and there's shark teeth marks right round your body. But you did get back in the water. Can you remember the first time you went swimming after this?
Yes, I certainly do. About 3 months afterwards. It was still summer. My wife paddled me out on a large paddle board and I just slipped into the water. And the first thing I saw was all these sharks coming in towards me, but it was the sun glistening on the breaking waves and they were sending beads of light towards me, but they were all shaped like sharks. And I do remember saying to myself, Rodney, you've got to control this, otherwise you're going to be a mess.
Media interest went global, with every detail of how he escaped the jaws of the villainous shark described. But Rodney was concerned about the consequences of that.
The shark in our ocean is the last of the major predators that man hasn't got control over and been able to suppress. And the fear that's generated by that is huge. It's amazing how much power the word shark has got, you know, because the amount of attacks are minimal.
After his attack, he wanted to learn more about sharks, but was still nervous about diving. It was while he and his wife took their niece to the zoo that Rodney came up with his ingenious idea, not to cage the predator, but to cage the observer.
We came across the lions in their cage, and as I'm looking at the lions, I thought, maybe I could make a cage and I could put it in the water and I could go out. I got excited and I drew it all up and I had an engineering firm make it up that even if the shark bit on it, the teeth wouldn't come through enough to damage you, so you were safe.
The day came to put the shark cage to the test. Rodney also happened to take a camera into the water with him.
And it was frightening to start off with. And as I went down in the cage, I saw this big grey dark shape and one had snuck up very close to me and was swimming past the cage. It had this big black eyes, but it absolutely took no notice of me. The film that we made circulated around the world and then from then on, lots of people contacted me to organise expeditions for them.
One day in the early 1970s, he received a phone call from a Mr. Spielberg from Hollywood, who was having problems making a realistic shark for his new film.
They sent over a small man, a half-sized man, in a half-sized cage so that our sharks would look twice as big.
So a lot of the footage in the Jaws movie is your footage?
One of the sharks came around side of the boat that we had, and one of the little cages that they'd sent over, a shark got caught in it and it twisted and turned and went crazy. And the underwater cameraman caught that particular footage and they had to change the whole script of Jaws to show the underwater marine biologist crashing to the bottom in the movie. Spielberg said that's what helped to make it such an interesting thing and made him famous.
It might have been the music as much as anything, Rodney, but the film Jaws was terrifying. I mean, there were stories that people didn't even want to get into the bathtub because of it. Did you feel a bit responsible for that?
Yeah, I didn't know at the time it was going to frighten everybody out of the water. I was trying to get people to go back in the water and enjoy the sea. It's been really, really hard to try and get people to understand the sharks. Personality-wise, some of them are really, really shy. Others will come bumbling right in and stick their head right up against you and have a look to think, what the heck's going on here? It's still, to me, like walking through a new botanical gardens every time you sort of go in the water.
Rodney Fox still runs expeditions to see great white sharks in South Australia. He's a leading expert in their behaviour and has campaigned for their protection ever since he was nearly eaten by one. He still has a piece of shark tooth embedded in his wrist. He was speaking to me, Rebecca Kesby, for Witness. And that's it for this edition of the Witness podcast. But if you'd like to try one of our other podcasts, then let me draw your attention to In the Studio, which takes you into the minds of some of the world's most creative people as they make their work. This week, the podcast meets the award-winning novelist Marlon James as he creates what's been described as his African Game of Thrones. Just search for In the Studio wherever you get your podcasts. For now, thanks for listening.